Hi, welcome to 11TA YouTube channel. We're going to discuss another Bond movie tonight. I've got my friends with me, Justin.
Hi, guys.
All right.
Yeah, very good, Paul. Very good. Hi, Samir.
Hi there.
Looking forward to doing another film. Hope you all enjoyed Dr. No last week. It's from Russia with Love.
It was actually the film that Samir wanted to do initially until we reined the leash in a bit and said, no, let's start right from the beginning and get, you know, do this properly. So, Samir, you kind of bossed it last week, I think, with all the knowledge.
Oh, thank you. Really appreciate that. I hope the guys out there who watched our video enjoyed the facts and figures about Mr. Bond.
Yeah,
Justin doesn't have to listen to the facts because I know he gets all of it and he drinks his beer at the time. But
It's not that. It's just, you know, it's like Top Gear and Grand Tour, old Jeremy Clarkson, isn't it? You know, when James May starts talking technical, it's just like, I want to know, but I don't really care. It's useful to have that encyclopedia because it's stuff that I just can't be bothered to read about. So
it's taken me over 20 years to get all these details.
20 years?
Jeez. I've been a Bond. Well, I remember watching my first Bond on the big screen in 83. But yeah, and then funny enough, in my teenage years, I became a Connery fan from a Moore fan. And after that, it's just before we met at QMC, I started really getting into it. Because before that, I was just an average Bond fan. Used to get excited when it used to come on TV, as you know, that we only had three channels or four channels in those days.
A soft porn channel 5, wasn't it?
That's all it was when it was like reruns of Emmanuel and all that shit.
I couldn't wait to press record on my video player at 16 for Channel 5 late night TV.
So anyway, James Bond, right? Does anyone want to lead us into this movie? Anyone got any decent notes to start us off?
I think what's interesting with it, I think what's interesting with this one is that obviously Dr. No, James Bond is all, you know, is about this sort of secret society of Spectre, isn't it? And this movie, we're introduced to a brand new character. So tell us a little bit about the character, Samir.
Okay, that character is Head of Spectre. And as you know, Spectre is an organisation that likes to sort of hold the world at ransom, or the different governments, trying to create problems between the Soviets and the West. So the plan was to steal this special coding system in from Russia with Love. And they wanted to take revenge for Dr. No's loss. So they planned it in a way where MI6, or the British Intelligence Service, would send James Bond over to actually nick the actual decoding machine. And it was planned by this mysterious character. I don't think I want to say too much about the name because he's known as Number One at the moment. But as soon as we can sort of, the next movies, when his name and face is revealed, I think we can go into it in more details who he is.
Yeah,
we don't, but we don't actually see his face till much later, do we?
No.
I mean, as in 20 odd films down the line.
No, he's not that far away, mate.
Because he's played later on by one of my favourite actors, isn't it?
I think it's another three movies before we actually do see his face and he introduces himself to Bond. So, yeah, okay. So that's what it's about. The other background, I think they've done really well, if I can say, with From Russia with Love, is actually the location of Istanbul. Because actually in real life, that was sort of one of the playgrounds between East and West with the spies, etc. So it did ring true to real life as well.
And am I right in also, maybe we'll talk about that later on in the film. I don't know whether my fact is right. But actually, I did just want to say something in my introduction. Just thank you to the chap that commented last week about Pan America.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to put a call out to that. So, which makes sense, wingspan, pan, you know, across. So thank you for that comment. Right at the beginning of the film, we were talking about the bullet going down the tunnel. And it just occurred to me that it's not a tunnel.
It's actually
the rifling on the barrel of a gun.
Yes, that's right.
The swells are is a rifling, so it's not a tunnel. I did not that anybody's commented on that, but I just thought I'd mention that so people didn't think we were bloody stupid.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was editing the video, I thought, yeah. why did we say tunnel?
Yeah,
it's quite clearly a gun barrel.
It is, and it's actually bothered me, you know, since we reviewed it. So I meant to mention it earlier. So apologies for that, fans. It is the rifling of a barrel of a gun. You know,
fans, like we've got any fucking fans?
Well, it's only the three of us at the moment, isn't it?
So, exactly, you know. We're the only ones that watch it.
Yeah.
Fans. Sorry, fans.
My sons are into it. My sons are subscribed. You know, they're watching it. They love it. You know, the kids have really they've got into it. They're looking forward to seeing the recording of this one, actually.
So next time you go and we go to the pub, Justin, I'll ask for your autograph, mate. Definitely.
Absolutely.
And,
you know,
and your support. Yeah.
Well, it saves getting confused for, you know, bloody Ian Beale. So, you know, I constantly have to do that autograph. So.
I didn't really. Yes, that's correct.
Ian Beale. Fucking hell.
Although when I was younger, it was Prince Harry. Before I wore glasses when I was younger, you know, it was I got confused with Prince Harry a lot.
Yeah, I can't see that.
No, you can't now, but when I was six, you know, sort of 6, 7, 8 years old, you know,
that was a lifetime ago, mate.
It was a lifetime ago.
Only a little while ago then.
Anyway.
Only yes, mate. Anyway, getting back to the movie.
Let's go back to the movie. I mean, that's the whole reason we're sat here sweating under the lights. Should we talk about some of the cast?
Yeah, sure.
One I want to get in there is Robert Shaw, who played Grant.
Oh my God, amazing actor.
Yeah.
Amazing actor.
If you read Quint in Jaws as well.
That's right, yeah.
That's where I know him from anyway.
And also... he played a German tank officer. I think the movie was called Penzo or something like that. I'm not 100% sure. But he played him there. And he played quite a few amazing characters. He was really good. Guns of Nevron Part 2. Another Guns of Nevron or whatever it's called. He was the actual lead in that. He died really early. I think he was 77 or 78 in Ireland of a heart attack.
Was this the big guy?
Grant, Red Grant or something his name was, yeah. That was him.
Right.
Yeah, the assassin guy that was following Bond around, basically. Yeah, picking people off behind his back and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. The thing was, funny thing is, they were saying in documentaries about Bond that he himself would have been a great James Bond because he had the physique, he had the roof, he was ruthless enough. But I can't see him having the charm because I've never seen him in that sort of character, although he was quite charming in a movie called Men of All Seasons. Well, I think he played Henry, King Henry. Can't remember. I think it was sixth or eighth. Oh, I can't remember which one. But yeah, he played one of them and he was really good in that. So you have to watch that movie as well.
Mm. What about the lead actress? Is it Danielle Bianchi?
Yeah, she never heard of her. Yeah, she was one of those. It's really funny because, you know, like we were talking about Ursula Andrews last week in Doctor No. At that time, in the 50s and 60s, the great thing was European cinema was massive. So I'm talking about French and Italian movies were big hits. And quite a few of them have become legendary actors and actresses. And she was one of the famous Italian actresses at the time and massive in Europe. And obviously, you didn't have that many Russians coming into Western Europe or escaping from the Soviet Union. So obviously, they needed someone who would be playing a Russian/Soviet. And yeah, she got the part. And I think her voice was slightly dubbed in certain areas to sort of get rid of the Italian accent and make it more Russian. They did something to it.
Is that the first... woman then that we were introduced, because obviously typically a Bond movie there's always a few, isn't there? And I'm rubbish with character names apart.
Okay, so if you're talking about are you talking about the character that Sean Connery was sort of having a picnic with, because that was the first lady actually introduced?
Yeah, that was the first one. Yeah
so
yeah,
she was the one we're talking about.
She was the woman from the casino in Dr. No.
Yes. So I'm
going to...
History on that. Since From Russia with Love, in the new Bond movie, they're actually going to have on having a regular girlfriend with a new one coming up, No Time to Die. But the idea was with Sylvia Trench was to have a regular partner or wife or girlfriend for Bond. But after From Russia With Love, they decided to write that off. So that's why we never saw her again. But that was the original plan to have her in the next three or four movies.
I thought that was the point. The Money Penny was always the yearning constant in his life.
Money Penny was the one that he always wanted to flirt with. There was some sort of sexual tension there between them. But no, I think she was never ever going to be his wife or girlfriend to be or whatever. It was just one of those flirting things.
Knowing Bond of recent movies, I found it quite odd that you had a female character in it that was from the previous movie.
Yeah, you don't typically get repeating characters other than the lead, of course. And the lead people in it, like Jaws and all the rest of it,
Well, you think most women, majority of women in Bond movies, like throwaway, aren't they? They get their 30 minutes and that's it, they're out the door.
That's why they got rid of her after the second movie, Sylvia Trench, because the directors thought, if we have Bond tied up to a lady or regular girlfriend, then it won't have a sex appeal to the audience because they wanted that. They wanted the sex and rock and roll and
Well, you can't have monogamy, can you?
That's boring, isn't it? I mean, most people were doing that in the 60s, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, as we were saying, free love and all that stuff. So basically, that's why they, I think, got rid of her because they realised it wasn't going to work for that generation.
No. I've got to get this off my chest. I think it's about 52 seconds in where we see the feet climbing the stairs. You might want to check this one out on both your ends. But the second step, sags. Bit of a blooper, bit of a continuity fuck up there. But I had to look at it a couple of times and thinking, they really didn't build that set very well, did they? It's like Fawlty Towers. We slammed the door and the whole set wobbles,
Again, we have to say, budget there was $2 million.
Yeah.
So basically, if you think about what they achieved for $2 million there, it's quite amazing. But at the same time, what you say, Justin, there are bits there where you look at the movie and you think, okay, would he get away with it with in 2021? Obviously,
you wouldn't. I mean, you accept it because it's an old film. If you haven't seen this film, obviously, the first time it came out, you suddenly, think, oh, straight away, oh, Sean Connery's, been killed. By this guy, this Spectre guy, after he's killed, I think it sort of follows the same scene really, with the set, the budget, when he's laying on the ground, it doesn't look like Sean Connery is wearing a mask, it's a Sean Connery mask on this guy. It doesn't look like it. It's actually Sean Connery playing this part, obviously. But as soon as he's dead, he's on the ground. It's quite clearly, a terrible, plaster cast of his face that makes a horrible noise as it's sucked off his face.
So if you if the scene you're talking about, Justin, if you look at the frame, Paul, and if you look at the frame clearly, you can tell they've actually powdered Connery's face a little bit more.
Yes.
So it looks like a mask. So that's why they're trying to put a 3D impression under his eyes.
That's right.
Where you think, okay, if you haven't not seen the movie before, obviously you think, okay, Connery, that's Connery. But once you look at carefully, you can tell that someone's playing him or trying to play him, but it is Sean playing him.
Yeah.
But then, as you say, the mask comes off.
That's right, because you can't get more lifelike than actually him playing it himself, can you?
No, and I don't think
that's... I don't know what you're talking about now, and he's different. Sean Connery is called Sean Connery, but he's not Sean Connery. Yeah. Basically,
when
he got shot... It was some actor on the floor and they pulled off a cheap looking mask off of him.
I'm about to watch it now. 2 minutes 44 in.
Where he basically gets the sharp wire and
2:54.
Strangles him. Yeah, strangles him. So that was in a garden, basically, on Spectre Island.
Now, does Spectre Island get talked about again? Because that was interesting to me that they've actually got an island named after them.
In the books, they do, but in the movies, it's not. really spoken about again.
I don't even think it's revisited, is it? I don't think we see that house again. I don't think we see anything of that again.
Because hold on. What about when was it Cleb? She lands on a helicopter.
No. In this film, you see it quite a lot. But I mean, in the future films, they don't revisit Spectre Island or that house. No.
I think there was a reason for that. That house actually was, I think, at Pinewood Studios.
Right.
So obviously, they weren't going to use Pinewood Studios Spectre Island over again, because obviously you would have to extend Pinewood.
Bond became very famous for having the silhouetted naked women. What did they do? Try and sex it up a little bit later on?
The truth was that Bond was about sex appeal. Let's be very frank and honest about this. A generation of men, I think up to our generation, dreamt of being Bond. And I think still people do, but obviously we live in a different time. I think at the time, chess was a big, quite popular game with intellectuals. And it was like snooker of the 80s, similar to snooker of the 80s. It was quite popular. Like, they'll be watching who was going to be the next world champion, et cetera, and they had those surroundings. You're talking about beautiful surroundings.
So it's just elegant. It's just so brilliantly elegant and simple. Yeah. You know, there's no one sat there with their head buried in their mobile phone, you know. It's like...
I have to disagree.
Really?
Right.
Go on.
I get what you're saying about no one's distracted just fucking like that on their fucking phone all the time. That does my head in.
Yeah.
But the actual decor, it's that awful gold shit that just looks cheap and tacky.
Oh, no, for sure. But
everything's
dark. The floor is a big chessboard. And I just, you know, all the artwork in the elaborate ceiling, you know, it's amazing. I don't know where that was filmed, or whether that was a set, or whether that's a real place.
No, I think it was a set. Again, I think it was in Pinewood. I might be wrong there. I've read it was a set anyway.
Well, that's a very elaborate set. They must have had a much bigger budget for this film, because that's an elaborate set.
It was $2 million, about $2 million. So if you think about what they achieved with $2 million, that was amazing.
Well, they must have used most of it for that scene.
But what I'm trying to say is it was actually a game. If you know the history of the 60s, it was like young people were like very different students. And that was what they were trying to mix in, was probably sort of have their intellectual revolution thinking, chess playing student who's also going to be appealed to, rather than just a guy who wants to be James Bond, who wants to smoke whatever, 50 to 100 cigarettes a day, womanize. They were trying to appeal to the other sector as well.
I got really confused about that waiter that delivered the glass of water to the chess table. He just lingered for so long. And I thought, what the hell is that about? But now I'm just re-watching that section. I see that he was actually indicating that there's a message for you on this little coaster.
What I'm saying, in the background, he probably killed the real waiter, and he was probably a undercover Spectre agent.
Paul, this is a question for you, because I know you share my interest with World War II weaponry. The dude coming down the stairs looks like an MP40.
Oh, I think it was. Yeah, I think they were used all throughout the film, the MP40s.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're spraying bullets everywhere and none are hitting.
Yeah, basically A-Team, Dukes of Hazzard style. And
which was bollocks, really. As far as I'm aware, from what I've read, the MP40 was a damn accurate and reliable machine gun at the time.
Yeah, well, it was one of the first, in terms of handheld machine guns. I'm sure it was one of the first. I'm sure it was.
I don't know.
These fish. Got to get onto that.
Wait a minute, before we get into the the Siamese fighting fish, can we just talk about...
Is that what they are, Siamese fighting fish?
Yeah. The cat, the Persian cat.
Yes.
There is no way...
Beautiful.
Yeah, my mum's got one, as you know, Hugo.
Hugo, yeah.
Right? There's no way I'll be sat there with a black suit and that cat on my lap. I know how much hair they shed.
Yeah.
That is mental. You just wouldn't do it.
No, you're absolutely right. You've got a Hugo and you're smothered.
Well, I don't know why he was wearing a blank suit, because normally that character wears a greyish, light greyish suit because of the cat. And that is his, basically his, what do you call it? His uniform as such has been the number one.
It's his first line of defense against cat hair as well, because that, those are Persian cats, their hair is like candy floss.
Yeah.
It gets everywhere. I've got one for you then. We're introduced to Spectre. Now we know a little bit more about Spectre, and it's a bit of a bigger organization than just one guy who's pretending to be Chinese. Yeah. What is it?
It's Spectre is a organization for terrorists and revenge, basically. So that's what Spectre is.
Spectre stands for.
Yeah, Spectre is for special something something terrorist revenge something
something
special executive for counterintelligence, terrorism, revenge, and extortion.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. All thanks right, for cool. that, Justin, because I couldn't remember all of it. Yeah, but that was the organization. It was the biggest criminal organization in the world at the time.
Yeah. I think that we should create one because it looks great, doesn't it? It looks like great fun.
What, Spencer? You
well, yeah. Or,
there's a lot of money involved in it as obviously.
Yeah, but think about the you know the comparisons with that in real day life in terms of what the simplicity of what they do, which is to do things they shouldn't really do, to eliminate those who get in the way, and if you don't do a good job, then you're eliminated yourself. You know, I mean, that's kind of everybody's day to day life in it in your own mind. Spectre to me is a bit like. Your life is all about complete accountability.
Well, if you think about Spectre, you can put it in another way. It's like the mafia, basically.
Yeah, no, no,
you
no.
Do it, yeah.
Yes, obviously, because it's a mafia type organization. What I'm saying is that everything you do, you're accountable for it. There's no let up. There's no chance to say sorry or make amends. No. You know, it's you've got one chance to, you know, whether you're number 2, 3, 4, or 5. You know, and they allude to there being 5 in this, don't they? She's number 2, he's number 3, and he goes up to number 5. But we later know that there's other numbers later on, and we know that that's their equivalent of 001, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the 6, and the famous 7, yeah?
Yeah. No, the reason why I mentioned mafia was because I'm trying to put a real sort of relation to a real-life organisation. If you muck up, you betray your... organization, you get killed in the same way. Spectre was the same. You betray them, do anything wrong, that's it. Doesn't matter how sort of a good job you think you may have done, but if number one thinks you're shit, that's it. It's over.
But they went all Reservoir Dogs later on, though, didn't they? You know, with bloody Mr. White and Mr. Pink and Mr. Brown.
That was a different organization.
Was that a different one? Sorry, was it?
Yeah, we'll come to that
a
little
on.
Bit later on.
Because
there's a reason for it as well. Very interesting reason.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that one.
Neither can I. The suspense is killing.
I'm trying to keep it interested for the audience.
Might spice up the conversation. Yeah. Colonel Klebb, it is Colonel Klebb, isn't it? The
correct,
When she's talking to I don't know the character's name. Tiana?
Tanya.
There's two moments in there that made me think, oh, that's interesting. What are they trying to portray there? She puts her hand on her knee, and then there's another bit where she's sort of circling around the chair. She puts her hand on her shoulder as well, makes her feel uncomfortable.
Is that a bit of lesbionics or is that a bit of...
Well, that was a hint. That was a hint, basically, that Klebb is lesbian.
The helicopter comes down. Everyone ducks towards the helicopter. Don't understand why. You know, you're not tall enough to why duck. And they
That guy was about 6'4", mate, the one who welcomed her, so that's why.
And they walk through the battle thing where they're shooting guns and they're doing a bit of karate and all that. I mean, that's just...
If you think about that scene, it was actually copied in a movie by Bruce Lee.
I was going to say, was it Bruce? Yeah. I was going to... Yeah. That is what I thought of at the time when I saw that. It really was. Yeah. You know, but I mean, but what we actually wanted to get back to was a scene of old matey boy being massaged, of course, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, of Red Blunt, yeah.
And sticking the knuckle dusters in his stomach, which I just thought...
Tell him to report to me in Istanbul in 24 hours.
I wish every job interview was like that, innit? Get a punch in the face. Yeah, you got the job.
You already did that.
Or you're definitely ready, you know.
I did laugh at that. I thought, is that all it takes?
Yeah. Bang! Yeah, he's good. Let's go.
Well, what they were trying to say, if you think about it, it was indirect political sort of engendered there for the audience as well, saying, look at these Russians or anyone that is sort of related to that sort of side. Look, they're dangerous. They're well-trained. And don't forget, the average Joe is not going to have a six-pack that's solid or even have a six-pack. They're going to have a one-pack dad's body, and that's what it was. So that's the reason why you're going, bloody hell, if these guys are going to be trained like this, if we have a war with them, we're going to be in big shit. So yeah. It was about that, really. Get you a little bit going, scare you a bit.
I was scared.
Yeah.
I was petrified. I thought, there's no way I could take that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but don't you, Justin, don't you sort of interview people where you whack them in the sort of ribs or is it kidneys? Kidneys?
No, that's not my thing. No, so you give them a good fucking nutting, innit? Okay. Yeah. No, we can't discuss that, Samir. That's
private.
That's for a different YouTube channel.
That's for something very different. Anyway, moving swiftly on, we're then introduced to, to be honest with you, I think she's absolutely stunning, you know, absolutely stunning. The bird that comes out of the consulate, the one that's the video, Samir, I'm sure you're going to tell us what her screen and off-screen name is. She comes out the Russian consulate onto the pavement to meet her.
I think we've already done that.
Have we? No, we haven't met her yet. That's the first time we've met her. You were talking about the Lesbononics, but that comes shortly, doesn't it? We've gone a bit ahead.
Yeah, so, we have, yeah. Yeah. We're sort of jumping around around in sort of like a 15-minute time frame, I think.
We are jumping. I was trying to keep it organized.
We can go over it again. I just
think she's stunning. Really stunning. She is. I think probably one of the best looking Bond girls, actually.
I wish I was born at the time. I think she's very stunning.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. Really
pretty. She's Italian.
Is that it?
I think she Daniela or something. Bianchi, I think her name is. Yeah. So yeah, she played obviously the Russian because obviously you could never get the Soviets around to come and make movies in the West because of the lovely loving relationship we had with them at the time.
But did anybody notice that her shoes kept on changing? Her shoes, he kept just randomly. She'd gone from heels to flats to, you know, to inch heels to high heels. In fact, I'm just seeing, I'm watching now, her shoes are changing. She's gone up the stairs and changed again when she comes on the balcony.
I think it must be the editing must have been really awful, I think.
I think, yeah.
Or it's one of those things about Bond movies. Some of the old ones, you can tell that they've tried to sort of either rush it or it's a case of budget again where they've not realised, oh, damn, we haven't got enough time to cut that scene. Doesn't matter, let it go. No one's going to notice that.
But
obviously, because we're doing this sort of video, we are going to notice things like that. Another thing I'd like to discuss is about the location, Istanbul.
You mentioned this earlier.
I mentioned earlier that it was in real life. It was one of those places where East and West did play chess. But I mean, what I found it looked romantic. It was a romantic city, something very unusual.
They dubbed it as the cleanest city in the world.
Yeah, I think they did at one point. Yes.
What, Istanbul? Surely not. That's older than dirt, that city.
No, apparently it was, you know, it was dubbed at one point as the cleanest city in the world. And if you even flicked a fag bar, you got arrested.
Yeah, don't forget it was a different time. And yeah, it probably was because the founding father of modern Turkey, El Tuk, was very strict in that sense. He wanted to make sure Istanbul, not only Istanbul, but Turkey was very like Western and modern. I don't want to get too much in politics, but that what it was about, really. That's why it was dubbed one of the cleanest cities in the world. But in the modern times, it's probably Singapore or something like that. But anyway, the location itself, I think it was going to show the sort of Western audiences more about the East or Asia, although it's on the border. And that's why I think even to this day, I find From Russia With Love very interesting, although other Bond movies have been made in Turkey or been shot in Turkey, but
They revisit this location again. Isn't that little island when they're on the boat, the little lighthouse, isn't that
yes.
the location where M was held
The World Is Not Enough.
The World Is Not Enough later on, isn't it?
Yes, that's right, correct. Mm. And they've also used Istanbul for, I think, Skyfall, the start of it, where, if you remember, Daniel Craig sort of gets shot and falls off the bridge. That starts off in Istanbul. But coming back to From Russia With Love, although it's been used two or three times, the first, I don't know, there was some romance about it done in the 60s, because nowadays, a lot of people have been there, don't know what Istanbul's like, but in those days, people just wanted to imagine how it would be in the Oriental world. Like, the other character I would like to sort of introduce here is Karim Bey, the head of T section, for example. So they gave him that sort of, a posh Turkish guy who ran the Secret Service for the British Secret Service, or the branch there in Turkey, and all that stuff, where he had that romance with his PA or whoever, like, come and visit him in the afternoons, and he would have a bed on the side and of his office, and basically black coffee with semi-sweet or whatever. And all those sort of things was quite unusual or very Oriental sort of thing at the time.
We're now introduced that bit on the what you were talking about earlier, Paul, or the girl from the casino is the bit I got to about 19 minutes in, and he's had his bleeper. Love the car phone that he goes to.
Talking about that car, that was actually the original Bond car, because in the books he actually drove a Bentley, never drove an Aston Martin.
That didn't come until later. Yeah.
No. And I've got a very interesting story about that as well for the next movie, about the Aston Martin and how it happened.
Good. Let's save that for the next one then.
Yeah. I like the phone in the car. That, I suppose, cool, at that time, that was quite innovative. It was like no one ever thought of that, I suppose, at the time.
Yeah, but I have to say, right, he's in the car in the middle of nowhere with trees. He gets fucking signal, doesn't he?
What you don't see on that is a big long cable that goes all the way out the back of the car.
Yeah, with a
massive all the way back
aerial.
Down the road.
Well,
the guy with the guy with a cup at the other end, you know. It's just one massive lead. There's some dude, you know, like World War, where he's got the thing on his back. The guy's always getting snipered. He's reeling it out when he's running along.
Because did you see the winder in the car, though, for the phone call? There was a little winder there as well.
Well, yeah,
Yeah. So obviously he had the communication stuff, like you were talking about the pack.
Yeah.
The bleeper you're talking about, and the mobile phone, they were actually the first people to do that. And actually scientists are sort of saying, we actually saw that technology and started to try to do that in real life. Yeah. They couldn't do it for another 25 plus years before they could even get a bleeper going. That was amazing. What if you think about the Cube branch.
But I think that's why you didn't see much of it. I mean, it looked like a baby monitor. But
it weren't real, was it?
No.
Prop.
I mean, these films aren't, you know, it's not about, you know, this technology is going to come later on. I mean, it was just a gimmick, isn't it? You know.
So basically,
somebody had to think of that, though, didn't they? I mean, the technology wasn't available, but somebody must have watched it and thought, oh, we call that a beeper, I think.
But
the idea must have been there.
I think it's amazing how certain movies have actually been advanced in technology. Because if you think about Knight Rider, for argument's sake, because I know it's a TV show about a talking car, that is out now.
In M's office, it's not. It's no longer the Battle of Trafalgar.
Is it the horse photograph?
Yeah, it's like a horse and cart carriage and stuff.
Yeah.
Have you lost me?
No.
Any force? No.
I just think no one gave a shit.
Okay, right, moving on. Right.
I think that was the truth.
Okay.
We were waiting for your answer to the photo. The
okay, right. Briefcase, bastard. So,
oh, that, yeah.
I love the briefcase.
Talk about something way over-engineered.
Oh, massively. Yes. I mean, why would you need 50 gold coins?
You may need to bribe certain people to get somewhere, to do in the Cold War. So that was a reason, probably. But the amazing thing was, after that, they took those briefcases out and they're sold in the thousands in Asia, parts of Africa, America.
Well, ammunition included.
Obviously, they didn't have the knives and... the 50 gold coins, obviously, or the powder that you could stick at the top and it'll blow up in your face or whatever. But no.
That's a good feature, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You get some powder so you can blow up your own face. Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant, right. Yeah.
Can you imagine you're in a rush trying to open it and you forget? It's not going to be a good look, is it? Especially if you're on a date or honeymoon night. Yeah.
Or even a meeting, a boardroom meeting.
Yeah, can you imagine that? But yeah, that was a massive seller.
You're saying it was a briefcase. It had no ammunition, had no knives in it, had no gold sovereigns in it. So basically, what sold really well was a briefcase.
Yes. And it had what it had. Obviously, it didn't have the coins, but it had, you know, those the actual strap that came out with the coins.
Yeah.
It had that feature as well. So yeah. So basically, yeah. In a nutshell, it was the briefcase that was the first product placement success in probably film history.
A briefcase.
Excellent. That's,
a briefcase.
Great.
Not a car or anything like that.
Not a car, but a briefcase.
I bought one.
Yeah, I think Justin's any person in this decade that still uses a briefcase.
Yeah, you bought it for me, actually, for my birthday.
Is that the one, is it?
That's the one, yeah. Yeah.
When did you buy that? That wasn't just recently, was it, Paul? No, probably about 20 or years ago, 25 years ago.
No, it was a few years ago, but I lovingly use it every day. Cars. Let's get on to interesting.
There's no cars in the...
No, not the same as Dr. No, but I loved the old Citroen, the car that follows it.
The Bulgarian Secret Service.
Yeah, that is such a lovely car.
Beautiful car.
I looked at it and thought... Awesome, love that. Very, very sort of very French. Not the shit they build now.
I think Justin, you'll realise Citroën is French, so that's why it'll be very French.
No, but it's their styling. The French know how to style, don't they? You know, it's not stuck together with blue tack and a bit of a few paper clips. But don't forget, you know, French were brilliant at styling. It's all very romantic in their style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what did you think about the Rolls Royce?
Well. It's just nice, isn't it? It's just a Rolls Royce, very refined.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And because we're talking about that,
Queen has several of them.
Yeah. I don't like the new one, or those two more than for me. Yeah, but anyway, coming back to what we were talking about, how do you like when Bond gets to the airport and he meets Karim Bey's son and they have these secret codes? Do you use a lighter?
That he learns later on.
Can I light a cigarette? Do you use a lighter only till they work?
Oh, I wonder what that was. I didn't quite understand that line and why it was injected in, but now it makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, it's code, so they make sure you're meeting the right person because mate boy hears it through the train window and emulates it and then kills the agent and then obviously Bond, clever, he figures it all out, doesn't he?
Yeah, so basically that was another real-life thing they actually used because they say that the British always had these strange codes and that's what it's based on. So he is a Secret Service agent running a branch for the MI6. And yes, he is sort of a mixture of, if you want to say, a mafia and a Secret Service person.
Is that why he's got a picture of Churchill on his desk?
Yes, because he's part of the T branch, which is he's the M of Turkey, basically, yeah.
Okay.
Because of the British Secret Service branch there.
Right.
He's fully legit, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is why Bond feels very comfortable around him. And
it's pretty efficient as well, I felt.
Yeah, I mean, he's a get anything, do anything bloke, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it also shows you how certain ways are done in the were done in those countries, and in certain countries they're still done that way. Like, you know, how efficient they are. If you want anything, we can get it done. Yeah. So they were sort of showing the true sense of how the Balkans or Turkey or the Oriental world worked.
Mm.
So yeah, it's very, very well.
You have you have a few of these through the films, don't you? Like, obviously, the one Robbie Coltrane with the terrible Russian accent later on, but that's not quite the same thing, is it? That's just
that was a completely different.
He just respects him, doesn't he? He's got that mutual respect.
Well, just quickly going to that character, he was ex-KGB who had turned into Russian mafia, right. You know.
Yeah.
So he's a different character. This guy wasn't really mafia. He was actually...
Love Robbie Coltrane, but that's a later film, obviously. But yeah, it just didn't...
A very long way. Yeah.
So I actually talking about Istanbul again, obviously, where they are, because, you know, sorry, everyone, I don't know what that temple is that they keep showing.
It's not a temple. It's the mosque.
There's the history of Sophia. That. It was a church. It was a mosque. Yes. It was a church. It was a mosque. It's gone over a lot of transformations in its time. Right. And then it became Sophia Hagia.
Then it turned into a museum where it wasn't a official mosque or whatever. And now I think it's been changed to a mosque by the current government in Turkey. And there was quite a bit of a debate. This. Is sort of the symbol of Istanbul, even symbol of Turkey, this mosque. So that's why if you look at every angle, you'll see it in the background from one angle, then another angle, then you see it inside as well.
That's what I'm saying, because obviously Venice features heavily in most Bond films. Yeah. That doesn't change an awful lot because, well, there's nowhere to build.
You can't really change it, can you? A little fact about that mosque in the film.
Yes.
There's actually Viking runes carved into one of the upper levels, the balcony area.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's how far back that church has been in existence.
Wow.
Yeah, and I can't never say it properly, but what Istanbul was called before Constantinople.
Yeah, it was the seat of the Third Roman Empire, I think.
Yeah. So he was an emperor, wasn't he? He was named after the Constant Emperor, wasn't he?
Constantine. Emperor Constantine. Yeah, he was the one that converted the whole Roman Empire into Christianity.
Yeah. So basically, he was the one who built that into a church. That was a church, as you said, that mosque, before becoming a mosque, I think, invasion of Muslims from, I think, Central Asia or something. Something like that anyway, something to do with that history, but it's quite interesting.
It's always been heavily contested ground, because if you look at it on a map, it's at the center of two peaks of that particular continent. It kind of joins, so it's always been heavily contested and fought over that. So it's changed hands so much.
Because if you look at Istanbul, most of it is in Europe.
Yeah,
and then you go across the bridge and then you're in Asia. So Istanbul, one part and the other part is in Asia. So, yeah, you're right, Paul, it is.
I wonder, that landscape behind, how much that has changed over time.
Probably mega, mega change.
Yeah.
Don't forget, before 2008, before the big financial crisis, Turkey was going through an economic boom. So loads of construction was done. But, yeah. There's a different story for a different time.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm just looking up Istanbul on the map, and you can see Bulgaria and Turkey are separated by this little kind of stretch of land where Istanbul sits right in the middle. So you can see why that was always changing hands.
Yeah.
Throughout history.
Gateway to Asia, as they used to call it, or still call it. But anyway, coming back to that scene where Bond goes to the hotel room and he checks behind the...
Oh, the mirror, microphone and that.
And then he goes in to get a honeymoon suite. That was all set up to get him trapped by beautiful Tanya. It was done by the KGB a lot. They were called honey traps. So that was a real-life... technique that the Russians or the Soviets used to use. Obviously, this time it was the Russians were actually being used by Spectre as a front to do that with Bond.
I'm going to go back to the church and the mosque a minute, because I just want to clarify exactly what it's called.
Yeah.
The Hagia Sophia. So I had it the wrong way around.
What fascinates me as well, you know, about this is the underground network that we see. You know, that,
hey, some of the waterways.
It was built as a reservoir, and it's huge. You know, I mean, is this existence? Is this a set? Is this actually
no? It does
real.
Exist.
Does it exist?
Because it does exist.
It's like the city is essentially held up by this amazing architecture of this underground waterways.
It is. Yeah, it's a cistern. It's a Roman cistern.
Yeah,
and
that's
right. It goes under a large part of the city because it was all down to Roman water management. So they built the cistern there and basically brought water to the whole city through that. Wow.
Well, what they've done now, Justin, actually, there's part of it where they've opened it up where public can get go in and see it.
I'd like to see that.
So they've got special light effects so you can go 24/7. You pay for it, whatever it is. It's not that $5 or whatever. I don't know what. But actually, you can see it. Obviously, they've cleaned up the water. Like they showed rats and whatever in the movie, but they've cleaned it up. But they say it's not safe still to actually go swimming in it.
Yeah, no, I don't think I'd ever do that.
The water's filthy. The water is absolutely filthy. Yeah, it's called the Basilica Cistern.
As always with Bond films, the plots are pretty straightforward in it. You know, we've got Spectre, we've got this machine that's trying to be grabbed, a bit like the Enigma machine, isn't it? That's kind of what the story is based around. But maybe it's the early films, etc. Just quite slow moving, quite a simple, basic storyline.
Out of all the series, I would say From Russia With Love, there's two elements I have to talk about. One, I think Connery looks more comfy in the part as Bond. He looks like Bond more now than he did in Dr. No. And the second part was, this was really the last in the Bond series of movies, or econ Bond movies, where it was a true spy film, the traditional spy movie. In a sense, there was no gadgets as such. Okay, you got the briefcase, but it wasn't outlandish sort of thing. You didn't have this sort of thing. It was like how actually spies worked in real life. It was slow work. It was boring. It wasn't about going to different casinos every night, having beautiful women every night. It was actually serious business. And if you look at From Russia With Love, it does show more of the serious side. Yes, you do get the women in it. You do get some of the glamour of the locations, but mainly it was about serious business of spying and how to get what you want, basically, with connections, etc.
So I thought it was a much better film than Dr. No. I mean,
Dr.
No, I struggled to watch, and I had to watch that in two parts.
Yeah.
But From Russia With Love, I felt there was a lot of different subplots in the film going on at the same time. You had Grant just constantly in the background, just sort of helping out, and there's a few other storylines that were going on. So you could switch from one to the other. You could focus on different bits at different times. It wasn't just this very linear story. I thought it was much better. A lot of explosions and stuff. There's obviously a lot of money spent on just blowing shit up.
Well, we saw that later with the boats in particular.
No, but before that as well, I think if you remember the gypsy, where they go to the gypsy camp.
I was going to mention that because I'm still struggling to understand why that was even a thing in the movie.
Okay, so the purpose was Bulgarians, they found that guy outside the Soviet embassy when he opens the Citroen door dead.
Yes, right. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they knew that Bond was in town, the Bulgarians, and because of that, they said they'll be watching his hotel, and if he would go in there, they would probably try to get revenge and assassinate him or kill him. So what Karim Bey said, rather than doing that, why don't we I'll take you to my old friends who are the gypsies. Because if you remember in the beginning when he was introducing himself to Bond and he said, I've not done bad for a guy who used to break out of chains and bend bars in the circus.
Yes, yeah. I do remember that, yeah.
So I presume the gypsies must have been his friends from those days, basically, and they were his friends. So he basically sort of went there to make sure Bond was safe and stay there the night. But in between, if you remember, they go into the sort of waterways and then they spy on the Soviet embassy.
Oh, that was a ridiculous periscope. I mean, can you imagine being sat in that room? Yeah. And you'd, in the corner of your eye, you'd see this little thing just kind of meh. You'd be like, what's that?
Yeah, that was a little stupid. That was a little bit strange. Yeah.
I think he did explain that how they've managed to do it, how they disguised it in the embassy or something. I'm sure in this copy they didn't say it, but I've seen it in certain other past copies where he sort of explains it quite fast, so they couldn't see the and looking in the embassy. But you're right, otherwise you'll be like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, the corner of your eye, you'd see that, especially that it's coming up and down and moving around. You'd be like, we must deal with that someday. Yeah, deal with that.
What if the light catches it? Anyway, getting back to the gypsy, it was a bitch fight, wasn't it?
A point of it being in the story is that it gave Bond a reason not to go back to the hotel for the night, wasn't it? In case he got assassinated or whatever. But the whole elaborate kind of women in the belly dancer scene was like way drawn out. And
she was properly talented, though. That was some belly dancing.
So, again, I think it was what we discussed last week, guys. You know, when I was talking about people who had not travelled and they wanted to see something exotic, different, something
that
unusual.
That is definitely exotic.
Yeah, so don't forget, you and I and Paul, we've travelled, right? We've been abroad, we've seen different cultures. People had not seen that. Don't forget, it not been that long since the set. If you think about historic period, I mean, it only been less than 12, 13 years since the war had ended. And so Britain was still in slight poverty in the early 60s. Don't forget the revolution and the economic boom hadn't really taken hold of the country, if you think about it. So it was like taking people out of their miseries, basically.
Yeah, so what people really need to take them out of their misery is just an extended belly dancing scene. Listen, I've been to Shropshire, right? I've been as far as Shropshire. I've seen it all. And that belly dancing scene was just way too long.
It was a bit drawn out.
I did not see anything exotic about it either. It looked like she was going to throw up.
Yeah, but don't forget, we're talking about 1960s here. We're not talking about 2021.
Oh, yeah, I'm aware of that. But even all that belly movement stuff, it just looks like she's going to fucking chunder.
Yeah.
One of those ladies in the fight scenes, I think it was in the green top, she's actually using another Bond movie. So it's quite interesting. She plays a sort of one
it's
of the
slightly
main...
overacted, though, as well. I mean, she stares at that hand coming there like...
Yeah, the fighting bits, you know, where the Bulgarian assassin comes in, trying to kill Bond, fails, run off. But it's the morning bit that makes me laugh, because you look at the scene, it's bloody freezing cold, and you can tell it's shot in Buckinghamshire and Pinewood Studios. If you look at the actual plantation around... It's like you can tell it's a proper 1960s cool morning winter in England, like a freezing night. If you look at it carefully, the ground and stuff, I know I'm going into details, but in the evening, at night, it does fool you. You think that is Istanbul or outskirts.
I don't know. There's so much to talk about in this fight scene. I mean, they set like the gypsy things. You can clearly see they're preloaded with paraffin all over it, you know, and then just sort of turn around and he's like bang, oh, bang, 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 you know, it's just, and his arm gets a lot better really quick as well. Did you notice that he gets shot in the arm? It only takes about three scenes and it's much better again. He's like moving it around, you know.
Don't forget, he was a sharp shot as well, so that's why it's like he turns around and he can shoot like in the dark without you know, he's got 20/20 plus vision or whatever it is. And that's why he was so good.
Well, I think, we're kind of being a little bit facetious with it, you know, and sort of taking the piss and having a bit of fun. But, you know, it was 62.
I know. We keep saying that. And it is true. I mean, it's like the guys fighting up on the ledge, you know, and et cetera. But it's like the hip shooting. It's what I'm saying. It's like the shooting from the hip, you know, that, and he's just sort of like,
Funny you mention that, because I felt exactly the same as well, shooting from the hip. I mean, there's like the least accurate you can do with a gun. But I guess it's like a remnant of the old Wild West movies, I suppose, because they're all kind of like from the hip.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
It's so people, easy. I guess people just kind of, in movies, that was just how you did it. That's how you acted with a gun at the time, I suppose.
Yeah. And
until you had all the kind of introduction of like proper military and weapon handling experts coming on movie sets and saying, well, actually, no, because that film and this one, the trigger discipline is absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
Everyone has got their finger right on the trigger. You know, all they've got to do is like trip on something and they're sprayed up the wall and they've shot about three people. You know.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, it's awful. But, you know, it's like of the time, isn't it?
Yeah, but don't forget, also, we were talking about gun handling sort of changed once Eastwood made the spaghetti westerns. It started changing after that. If you think about it, the way he used to handle the gun was very different to John Wayne, which was that on the hip sort of thing. But anyway, we're getting a little bit critical there. But yes, you're right. It was, they don't have any military sort of advice on that.
So I think we conclude sort of like, you know, the gypsy scene was there for a reason. It was important and all the rest of it. So.
Oh, yeah. Another bit of which I found interesting was it Chanko, the Bulgarian assassin, where Karim Bey and Bond going assassinating, where has an entrance escape hatch through the lady's mouth.
Yeah, and that's the scene we come to now where they sort of, you know, assassinate him.
Yeah.
You know, and he says, oh, the coppers are my brothers. They're going to knock on the door. Everyone's his brother. You know,
his sons.
That's it. Yeah, his sons. Yeah. So that's the bolt. So the guy you see at the beginning of the gypsy thing that comes in front of the green van and shoots. That's that guy, isn't it? It's coming out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yeah.
And what makes me laugh about that scene is like he goes, "I want to be in your debt." Blah blah blah. Let me shoot him. So he shoots him. Connery puts undoes the sort of rifle, puts it together, and puts it in his suit. And when he's doing that, Karim Bey says something and he goes, yeah, she should have kept her mouth shut or something like that. It was one of those cheesy sort of jokes.
Yeah. Actually, that whole picture on the wall, you see that a number of times and it had Bob Hope and somebody else.
Yeah.
Is that a genuine movie that was due to be released at the time? Was it a fake movie? I don't know.
I would not be surprised if it was actually a genuine movie at the time, because I'll be very honest with you. I've seen the name. If you mentioned the name, Justin, of the movie, I can sort of confirm it, because I'll be honest with you, I've read Bob Hope, but I didn't read the name of the movie. And I've seen the movie so From Russia With Love so many times.
The name of the movie.
Well, while you're looking that up, we're not strangers to product placement in these movies, so it wouldn't surprise me when I saw it, because it was so, everything else is dark and grey in those shots, in that particular scene, apart from that big movie poster whatever it was. So I thought, all right, are we, you know, is this another cross promotion, another product placement? It might even be the same studio that recorded it, you know, trying to cross promote movies and stuff.
It might be a plug, as you say, because don't forget Bond was was the first product placement movie.
Call Me Away something Ekberg. So it's actually an Albert R. Broccoli Presents. Bob Hope and Anita Ekberg. Bob Hope and Anita Ekberg.
Okay, so you've got two connections there straight away with Bond. Albert Broccoli and Harry Saltzman. And they were producing that movie. That was the next movie they were probably producing.
So it was a plug then, in that case. Yeah. It was a real movie.
Definite plug. Okay, well, something that I picked up on. I'm glad we clarified. We got there in the end. Took a bit.
Yeah, it did. Sorry. It's because, like I said, it's because I wanted to see if they showed it clearly in the film. Because you often see just pointless pictures and all the rest of it in the background to fill in. But if it's a plug, it will be clear. And it was, because he's looking for a scope, which is how I read that, because he's looking for the scope for the escape hatch, and it's clear on those names.
Right.
Yeah, another thing I would like to discuss is, you know, where the honeymoon suite, where obviously they've got a camera in the background, a film in Bond and Tanya having sex. But what always cringes me is it, when he looks at her lips and he basically says, she goes, aren't you going to kiss me or something like that? And she goes, yeah, I think your mouth is just the perfect size or something like that.
Yeah, that was a bit weird, wasn't it? Yeah. For me, and he goes, oh, for me anyway.
Twice in the movie she mentioned that her mouth was too big. One was when she was in that initial interview with Colonel Klebb. She said, yeah. I think my mouth looks too big. And again, in that bedroom scene with...
Yeah.
That, it's very odd. There's no other references to it. It's just those two, and there's no background explanation on that.
It's probably a very sexual message indirectly, which obviously you have to decode. Because quite a lot of Bond, sort of, even the music in certain movies, is about sexual things. How can I put it?
Things.
Basically, when I mean sexual things, it's about actually sexual movements or usage of certain things.
The particular thing that really bothered me about that scene where he's in the hotel room and he strips down into a towel.
Yeah.
And he goes in and sees Tanya in that room.
Yeah, towel.
They get with it or whatever. They get down to it.
Yeah.
At no point does he think, oh, I need to turn that shower off.
Yeah, it's the bath. He's running the bath. And it's like, yeah, again, I was exactly, Paul. I said, don't worry about the bath running, mate. I'd be overflowing by now.
Yeah, see, if that was me, there's no way I'd be able to get a hard on if I knew that fucking bath was running. I would have to say to her, sorry, love, I'll be back in a minute, all right? This is great. Yeah, we're going to get down and we're going to do it.
I just remembered I left the bath running. But it wasn't water that came out of anywhere. It was just fucking steam. But no, I agree with Paul. I'd be like, I'll be back in a minute, love. Fuck's sake, fucking... bloody Nora, turn, burn your finger, stub your toe. Ah, fuck, ah!
Every I think
get,
it's...
Every time you get back, she'll be like, oh, the moment's gone.
Mom.
That's real life, that is. Don't bother now. Bloody EastEnders on. I'd rather watch that.
Be honest with you, the word I was looking for was a sexual innuendo. Basically, they were you sort of using. Yeah, that's all. Yeah, correct. Yeah, sorry, I can't say certain words.
Yeah, sexual innuendos. But the big mouth. Yeah. What does that mean? I could get it in as well as my balls.
Like a tea bag, you sweetheart.
I think you've hit it on the head, mate. Basically, Paul, that's what she was trying to say.
Stuff it all in. That mouth is perfect size. I can get it just, all in. Just balls like, as well.
Yeah, obviously you can't say. Obviously you can't say certain things, can you? In the 60s, you weren't allowed to say that. You can't say. Yeah. Let me flip it out, and there you go. What happened there?
There's plenty of comedic moments in this movie. I felt there's lots of comedic parts. If we go right back to the very beginning where Bond comes into the office in London, he throws his hat onto the hat stand
and then behind the door.
And he says, oh, and for my next miracle. And then he's kind of cut off short immediately by the stare of M.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of comedy bits thrown in this time around.
Yeah.
Generally, this film feels a lot more confident in general. Obviously, they had the success of Dr. No and they thought, hey, we're onto a bit of a winner here. And they decided to just let the character flow a bit better.
Because if you look at all the characters, and especially Bond, and if you look at Connery's acting, he is more comfy in the character. Even his movements, like his physical movements, are probably are in much better flow. He's moving better. He's talking much better. He's confident. You think, okay, you've got Bond at last. That's the James Bond you see now. From then till his last official movie, Diamonds Are Forever, you see that is James Bond. That is the Bond you'll think about when you see Connery. But when you see Dr. No, you think, is this guy really sure what he's doing, or is he sure about this character?
Yeah,
because he's still, although they made him smart in the first movie and sort of worked on him, I think by the time he got to the second movie, I think I need to mention Terence Young again had really refined him as Bond. Really,
I feel like they're getting into a flow. The first one went well. They've got over the critics. You know, they've taken some feedback. They've done a bit of testing.
we can just talk about the train section. I mean, that train section is quite a lengthy part of the movie.
It is, and it's an important one as well.
There's quite a lot of dialogue on that as well. People get killed. Yes. I actually quite like the fight scene in that as well.
Yeah.
On that train section. And at one point, I thought those guys were actually getting kicked. I thought, as fight scenes go, it was actually a pretty good one, I thought.
Yeah, it was one of the best fighting scenes at the time filmed. Because it was, don't forget, the actual cabin was quite small. You had two guys who were above 6'2" or 6'3" fighting in this small space. And it was like a little bit of a dance. The way they did it was really well done. Also, it was like in those days, we don't get it that often these days, but the luxury sort of restaurants on trains as well, where actually Bond realizes this guy is not a true English gentleman because he chose the wrong wine with the fish. He chose red wine instead of white.
Is that a bit like? Is that a bit like the scene in? Forget which German war film where they're acting as Germans in German thing, and he puts up three things, says tre glace, and he knows he's not German because Germans do that for three.
I think that might be a Quentin Tarantino movie. Is that not Inglourious Basterds?
Inglourious Basterds, that's it. He says tre glace, and the guy immediately knows that he's not German because if it was German, he would use his thumb as one. So that red wine scene is a bit like that. He kind of knew because who would have red wine with fish?
Well, I think even you know, even I know, I'm not even a wine drinker, but even I know you don't have red with fish.
Right. So it was that gave it away, obviously.
He kept on saying old chap all the time. Everything was old chap.
Old chap.
You're trying too hard, mate.
Overacting his position, wasn't it? Like, you know, trying to overact his Britishness.
He was trying to act like he was
Is he a British actor?
No.
Yeah, he is. He's a British actor, yeah.
No, Robert Shaw wasn't, was he? I think I'm pretty sure he's American.
No, he's British. Lancashire, I think he was born in Lancashire.
So that accent was very natural to him.
Yes. I think he was of Irish descent, born in Lancashire or somewhere up north. And then obviously, he probably had drama training, but he was a British actor who lived in Ireland, funny enough, for a very long time as well. So, but just to make it short, Paul, can you find out if it was Lancashire or Leeds, or I know it was somewhere up north he was born.
I'm looking it up on IMDb right now. Lancashire, England, eldest son of blah blah blah, a nurse and a doctor, paternal grandfather was Scottish from Argyle. Mother was born in Pig's Peak, Swaziland. His father while she was a nurse at the hospital in Truro, Cornwall, half hour away, 40 minutes away from me, where I am right now. I thought he was an American actor, actually, especially when I saw him in Jaws. You know, he played Quint character.
He played that well. It was very good accents.
Mm.
That, I think that was his last movie, Paul, if I think, or there was one more movie after that, and he died, poor chap.
So he died on August 28th, 1979. He was aged 51 when he died.
Oh, yeah, we were born. Yeah.
And then if you remember...
The Bulgarian mafia were on, weren't they? And he went and babysat that dude, which... Because he got onto the train, but it died. I think one of the things that was interesting about that is when the train stopped and one of his sons was there to meet, and he said, he's died. Get a message to M. It was like very discompassionate, wasn't it? It was, but there was no sort of sadness from him. It was like, oh, my dad's dead.
Yeah, I like the way he just kind of walked off.
Yeah, sorry, mate. You know, it was no sort of, oh, sorry if you lost, tap on the shoulder. It was like, just get a message off and sort of walked off. See you later, mate.
I suppose if you take it into context, is that they were all working for intelligence services.
Know the risks.
They all knew what they were getting into. I guess you could kind of read between the lines there that, fuck it, you know, we all knew what we were undertaking here, so he's gone, fine.
I think, again, the sign of the times, you know, where Bond gets upset, you know, and slaps her about a bit and, you know, and grabs you, you wouldn't get that in films now, would you? I don't think.
No, you wouldn't. But then again, talking about what you were talking about, not showing any emotions, it's a business that we're in, one. And don't forget, it's very much a upper-class English-British gentleman. You weren't allowed to say, oh, my God, my mate's died. No, it wouldn't have been accepted. That is a sign of weakness. Plus, as you say, it's part of the business they're in. I never questioned who gave the orders. We chose that business to be in. And that's what Bond's about. We chose the business to be in, be a spy or whatever. That's it. These things happen.
After the train, that lengthy train scene where there's a lot, he actually meets Grant and they talk. I really enjoyed that reveal bit, you know, where Grant's telling him, I did this, I did that. I was pretty much your guardian angel all throughout that. Yeah. I really enjoyed that bit because he just laid it all out, what he did. And you got the impression then that Bond was actually a bit of an idiot, really, at that point. He hadn't put any of that together himself. So, because I'm so used to certain Bond movies, like particularly the Roger Moore series in the 80s, where Bond was just a smug bastard all the way through it. He never did anything wrong. He was always right. And so it was quite nice to see it Bond humbled a bit in that particular scene.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm saying this was really the last Bond movie in a sense of true spy movie or a traditional sense where you do see that. Because after this, I think it changes. It becomes the ultra super spy. I know where he was on his knees and tells him. The next bit was, you know, where they get off the train in that flower truck. And then a helicopter chases them.
Oh, don't even get me started with that bit. You know, where the helicopter crashed, you know, it'd run fucking miles. And then you've seen the helicopter crash like 50 yards from the truck. You know, and of course there was a grenade that had dirtied all the front of the truck. That was all cleaned. I mean, the continuity wasn't great there. You know, I was a bit disappointed with that, you know. After that helicopter crashed, you turn around, you know, the truck was right there. And I thought, hang on a minute, you've run halfway across the moor.
They fooled people there because I think that was on in the Highlands of Scotland.
Very, very possibly, yeah.
Because, you know,
about 1 hour 40 into the film, you know, a grenade is thrown and it dirties all the front of the truck, you know, the windscreen, he stops. And
because now we get to the bit where they're on the boat.
My favourite bit, actually.
Just came with the helicopter scene. I like the way that the helicopter actually blown up, was destroyed. The guy gets shot, and the look on his face when he drops a grenade, I thought was priceless. And there's like, and then,
fuck! What happened there?
I like that bit actually. You're right. There was issues with it and the continuity and bits and pieces. But you know, I'm quite willing to just forget about things like that. But I quite like the way that Bond actually got into that flower truck. The way that he kind of crept around. Another evolvement of the character, I think, is that you start seeing him, you know, ducking and hiding and actually willing to take people on rather than this rather kind of scripted. It felt a bit natural the way that he took the guy out and stole that truck.
I've just noticed, sorry guys, cut you short there. Go to 1 minute 42.
You mean an hour and 42?
Hour and 42.
Yeah.
So, hour and 42, the helicopter's crashed.
Mm-hmm.
Connery's hiding. Right, if you look very carefully, as Connery gets out from underneath the stones where he's hiding, so 1:42:06.
Yeah, I'm watching it.
07. Yeah. Watch, as he runs away under the propeller, there is another person comes into shot and runs the opposite way to him. You see him?
He's ducking down. You just see a head bobbed, yeah.
I just literally just noticed it. Is it head bobbing along?
Yeah, they're trying to keep out. They're trying to keep out a camera view, but you can see the head. Just
Yeah.
That scene was actually done in Scotland, in one of the lakes. I can't remember which one, but yeah. So yeah, if you look at the sort of scenery and the actual atmosphere, you can tell it's not in Eastern Europe, and but not only that, it was the way they actually did the explosions that was quite interesting as well. Except when you look back and look at some of the boats when it is they're getting blown up with people, sort of thing, it looks not great. Where you actually see people are forcing themselves to jump off rather than flying off as you would do if it was a real explosion.
Did you talk about people jumping off and flying off? Is it when he pushed that that flower truck driver off. It was like a gentle push in the back, but the guy went miles off the boat. I mean, he leapt off the boat into the water.
It was filmed at Loch Gilfed, about 50 miles northwest of Glasgow.
Glasgow, okay. But yeah, that, I think that was the first time Connery had gone back in about 8 years or 8 or 9 years, I think, back to Scotland.
That was quite a sort of a dramatic explosion, that wasn't it?
Yeah. For the period of time that this film was shot in, I could imagine that would be really quite awe-inspiring if you sat there in the cinema watching that.
Definitely. And I think probably the last things to sort of talk about, I'm sorry, is the elaborate why not just fucking shoot him? Old Clegg at the end in the hotel room, you know, she just talks and talks and talks and tries to do this elaborate thing. Just shoot him. Why? Just shoot him. You know, and then she's doing this weird little dance with a knife in her foot. And
oh, yeah, the little blade in the shoe. That was quite amusing, actually, where she's trying to do these little granny kicks.
Yeah, it's like watching somebody with severe arthritis trying to jog. You know, it's just...
I think I'm going to go a quick on that From Russia With Love. It was sung by Matt Munro, who actually sang the song to Born Free. He basically had quite a few minor international hits where he was in the top 10, top 15 in America. So in those days, it was pretty hard for British singers to do well in America. So he was one of them who did really well because it was very similar to Frank Sinatra and stuff like that. So that's Matt Munro, and they never used the actual words in the title, but the first time you hear From Russia With Love is when Connery's on the River Thames making love to his girlfriend in the background where the radio's on there and it goes From Russia With Love. That was my awful singing, but yeah, that's one bit.
Yeah, the Matt Munro thing, when I listened to that, I thought it was somebody like Frank Sinatra or what's the other guy, Burt Bacharach or something like that singing it. But when I looked it up and it was Matt Munro, I thought, I've never heard of this guy.
Yeah. He was one of the big British stars at a time. He, as I said, sang quite a few sort of title songs for movies. And one of his other big hits was Born Free, which was, I think, later on in the 60s. The biggest thing I really want to cover, we never got a chance to talk about the Born theme. I'm just going to talk about it a little bit now, and then we can talk about it in the next one. It was actually based on a play about a Trinidadian Indian family called the House of Biswas, or Biswa. And it was written by Monty Norman. And there was a legal dispute on that as well with John Berry. But I'll go in more details with that. And then a Goldfinger one.
Well, there's a cliffhanger to end on.
There is a cliffhanger.
Yeah. I think that's that'd be a nice place to wrap this up.
I think
We'll pick that up in the next talk that we do, the next discussion. Goodbye from me. Goodbye from everyone else, I suppose. You want to say bye?
Yeah, that was really great. So I look forward to next one, which is Goldfinger.
And goodbye from me. Really enjoyed it.